Welcome everyone to episode 384 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to continue on with our season preview. As a reminder, we've been just going through teams based on where they finished last year, so we're going to go through the Eastern Conference lottery teams this time around. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are doing this episode live on Locker Room. So if you have an iOS device, please download the Locker Room app. You can come listen to us live. You can ask us questions, even come on stage with us. So again, if you have an iOS device, download the Locker Room app. If you are an Android user, they are working on an Android app as well. Nice. Joining me today, as always, is a co-host who I can only assume is starting to lose a little steam. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Oh, no, I'm not losing steam at all. Good. Brian, I'm thinking for Christmas, I'll get you some wireless headphones because your cord is scratching the ever-living hell out of something.
Is it? Oh, that's yep. So good. That's my bad. All right. Yeah. I used to have, like, I will not buy those stupid AirPods because I'm not spending $200 on headphones I'm going to lose in a week. Right. But I used to have a cheap, like, $20 pair of wireless headphones that I did, in fact, lose in 2 weeks and thus confirmed. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That, so I'm team wire all the way, baby.
So this is not, like, an ad because they are not sponsoring us, even though if they're willing to, you know, please. But I have those Bose Quiet Comfort. I've had them for years. And granted, like, they're pretty expensive, but they are great. Like, I'm not using them for podcasting necessarily, but just, like, for phone calls and whatever, and they're just really superb.
That's what you can DM Alex. When you send Alex a message later, don't mention the McDonald's. Do mention she can get some nice wireless headphones.
Oh, see, that all do. Okay. And see, we already have a suggestion from Matt here. Wired for desktop, wireless for everything else. But you're on a laptop, so
I am. Yeah.
Oh, see, that's he probably is including that, but on it's just a technicality, I'll say.
Yeah,
I'll go the different route. But okay, see, we are trying to actually just we're stalling because we are about to talk about the Eastern Conference lottery teams, and I don't think we want to. So that's why we're talking about like Christmas presents.
Every year we usually do division by division previews. This year, just because of the condensed schedule, we had to shrink six into four. So every year we have to do the Southeastern Division, and every year we just actively dread it because the Southeastern Division is by and large a tire fire. This year it actually would have been a little more interesting because Miami is now good. Atlanta, you know, has taken a big step forward. So naturally, instead, we are doing the 2020 version of the Southeastern Pod and just talking about seven mediocre to bad teams, although a couple of these teams will actually be fun this year. But
yeah, we're masochists, is what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. Well, luckily, next episode and the previous episodes, we actually got to talk about good basketball teams, and there will be a few sprinkled in this one as well. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of bleak futures in the Eastern Conference lottery teams. Not many of them made substantial strides this offseason. We'll start with the team that finished with the worst record last year, more at the Cleveland Cavaliers. They were 19 and 46. They got the number 5 overall pick. They took Isaac Okoro, but other than that, I mean, Andre Drummond picked up his player option. They didn't really make a ton of changes. They lost Tristan Thompson to the Celtics, but I mean, otherwise, you're largely running back the same team. So my first question, I think, for you is Colin Sexton. Because I think he had, because the Cavaliers were so bad, he flew under the radar a little bit, at least in terms of the national radar. But he was substantially better as a sophomore versus a rookie. So what do you expect from Colin Sexton heading into year three?
I think there is a legitimate chance that he kind of enters that Donovan Mitchell territory. And I fully acknowledge that when we recorded last time, which was just a few hours ago in real time, I expected Donovan Mitchell to take a leap up. So I'm talking about like the current version of Donovan Mitchell is something I think Colin Sexton could evolve into by this year already. Like, he is legitimately good. I think he has been miscast as a point guard. I interviewed him from Forbes over a year ago, and you know, he was like very, you know, married to the idea of being a point guard. But at the same time, he was playing the off guard position when I interviewed him, and I was like asking him questions about how it felt like playing as an off guard. Did you get better looks? And he was really embracing that as well, though. Like, it wasn't, well, I think he puts like being a point guard high on the pedestal, but there was definitely excitement to hearing his voice, because I spoke to him over Skype, and when I brought up like the whole shooting guard aspect, he was like, yeah, I'm getting different looks, and like the court is opening up a little bit more, and like he was genuinely excited about it as well. Like, this was a new avenue he really hadn't played in, and the numbers reflected that he was just so much better when he's put in a position where he doesn't have to carry the entire offense in terms of balancing scoring and playmaking, but where he can basically just be unleashed as a scorer and focus on that. And look, he averaged almost 21 points a game, 38% from three, almost 85% from the free throw line, 47 overall. I mean, so efficiency wise, he had a true shooting percentage of 56, which is above league average, or at least, well, I actually haven't even checked the league average for this year, but it usually is around 55. Mm-hmm. So those are legitimately good numbers. He decreased his turnover ratio. There's a lot to like there, and people are unnecessarily, I think, hammering him for not being that traditional point guard that they thought he'd be. And I'm sort of confused about that, because I watched him at Alabama quite a lot. There was nothing there to suggest that he would ever be a natural point guard. Mm-hmm. Like, every pundit in the game and every draft expert more or less said the same thing. So I don't even comprehend why those expectations were put on him when he came to the Cavs. Like, what did you imagine? That this was a scoring guard who would suddenly transform into Chris Paul? Like,
right.
That always confuses me.
I mean, I feel like it's more about his stature than anything else, because he's listed as 6'1", 190. So,
yeah.
You know, if his future is a two guard, that's clearly a pretty undersized two guard. And then when you're pairing him with Darius Garland, who similarly 6'1", 192 is what he was listed at last year.
Yeah, it's small.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's the big concern moving forward, not just about Sexton, but about that pairing, is like, if these two guys are the backcourt of the future, can you get away with playing one? I mean, you know, 6'1", 190 is fine for a point guard, but can you get away with playing two guys of that size? You know, one of them's going to have to be the nominal two guard.
Yeah, and it's a fair question. I don't think ultimately you can, but I already know of the two who I'd keep around.
Between Sexton and Garland, you mean?
Yeah. I appreciate what Garland did. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but it's clear that Colin Sexton is just better at this point. Mm-hmm. And he also as a rookie, like, you have to take into account that Sexton also had a better start to his career as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I would move forward with Sexton and just say, okay, he's an off guard. Then if you can find a big point guard, that could be interesting. So I wasn't personally high on Tyrese Haliburton, but in case I was wrong about him, he would have been a pretty interesting player to put next to Colin Sexton, because he's at least a guy you can rely upon getting into the flow of the offense and making passes and setting guys up. And he has a 6'5" frame, so he would be able to guard shooting guards, and you could just put Colin at, you know, on ones.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, this is definitely something they need to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the biggest question for them this season is, can you genuinely build around these two guys, or do you need to pick one, or like, do you need to bring one of the two off the bench? You know, in terms of their long-term future, this is the question they need to answer. But they do also have Andre Drummond coming back for one more year, and they're going to have to make a decision on him, because he'll be a free agent in 2021. He played only 8 games with them before the season shut down, but no, he averaged a pretty normal Andre Drummond line. 17.5 points, 11 rebounds, 1.5 steals.
11 rebounds is not normal Drummond line. That's like 4 or 5 rebounds less than he's used.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But, you know, they went 4-4 in his 8 games that he was active. So do you think having a full season with him, not saying the Cavaliers are necessarily a playoff team, but like they're not the worst team in the East anymore, right?
Yeah, I definitely think he does raise their ceiling. The question is how much? Because we've talked about Drummond a lot before, and fact is, you know, despite his obvious talents, he would just mentally check out. Like, yeah. That was just the thing he would do. And it was unfortunate, and I don't think the Blake Griffin trade helped. I mean, it seems like he was finally becoming like the team's playmaker.
Yeah,
and he was finding his groove. He was finding some level of motivation. He'd finally figure out the free throw aspect as well. I'm not to the point where, you know, he was hitting 80 from the line, but he took a leap from like 38% to 60. I mean, that's a drastic leap. That's a legitimate improvement. Mm-hmm. And then Blake came in and started like running the point essentially.
Yeah.
Which I don't think he felt appreciated, and I think he kind of checked out a little bit, and then he just kind of collected stats over the next couple of years until he got moved. I do know, because I also asked Colin Sexton this when I interviewed him, was, you know, how he felt about Drummond, and he was very, very high on Drummond. Very, very high. He was a new acquisition at that point, but he was like, yeah, no, this guy, he's legit. And I agree with him. Like, talent-wise, Drummond could be a perennial DPOY candidate if he just asserted himself. He really could be. While also leading the league in rebounds, he could also be a 20-point player. I don't think there is that drastic of a ceiling on Drummond outside of the ceiling that he puts on himself.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's led the league in rebounds in 4 of the past 5 years. He's averaging, you know, usually 15 to 17 points a game over that span as well. So, you know, I will say this often, but he's not the unicorn big man. He's not going to hit, he's not Jaren Jackson Jr. He's going to hit like 3 threes a game. He is starting to show that a little bit.
Right.
I mean, he's taken 35 this past season. He hit only 5 of them, but, you know, he's at least showing that if you leave him completely wide open on the perimeter, he will take that shot. And, you know, that might be something that teams are okay with until he hits a higher volume of them. It's clearly something he's working on, at least, you know, it's good. That's a necessary thing for him to stay relevant into his 30s. It'll be really interesting to see how he fits, especially with that backcourt, because, you know, these are huge decisions the Cavaliers have to make in a year. Sexton will be up for an extension after this season. Drummond will be a free agent. You kind of, you know, it's weird to say they're already in this mode where they need to start really thinking about their long-term plans, because it feels like just yesterday that LeBron James left for the second time. But, you know, we are now entering year 3 of post-LeBron. So the dust has settled, and now it's time to actually start figuring out answers to these questions.
I would agree. And I think part of this is positive for Drummond as well, because like we just talked about his playmaking. We just talked about Colin Sexton and Darius Garland's lack of playmaking. So maybe this opens up an opportunity for Drummond to actually dig back into that. And maybe that does open up some possibilities for the Cavs that could lead to some surprising results. I don't know. I mean, I'm not closing the door on it.
Look, I mean, Kevin Love was their second leading assist man last year at 3.2 per game, and as long as he's in town, I'm sure some of the offense will continue to run through him as well. So yeah, maybe they don't have a traditional guy who averages 7, 8, 9 assists per game, but maybe Garland averages 4 or 5, Sexton averages 3 or 4, Drummond averages 3, Love averages 3. Like, it could make them more unpredictable offensively.
If I told you that Kevin Love has spent just as long in Cleveland as he did Minnesota, would that surprise you?
Yeah, I think someone said, I saw it the other day, that he is the longest tenured member of the Cavaliers championship team now that Tristan Thompson's gone.
That is true. He's been there for 6 years. He's entering his seventh season as a Cap.
Yeah, which is wild because he's been in trade rumors for five of those 6 seasons.
Yeah, well, that's crazy too, but like just time flies. I remember sitting here at home. I felt this was just a few years ago that I was sitting here at home following LeBron, like his whole coming home piece. Mm-hmm. And that was before the Cavs acquired Kevin Love.
Yeah.
Things are moving quickly, man.
Yeah. Time flies when you're watching a bad team turn good, then turn bad again.
Yeah, I guess so. But it is interesting, though, because you bring up the Cavs have been bad for so long. Like, with no LeBron, right? Why did we not see Kevin Love assert himself a little bit more? That's weird to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think maybe in part by design, like they are trying to run their offense through their young guys because they know Kevin Love is not a big part of their future.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it's a good question, and I'm sure it's a question that anyone considering trading for him is going to ask themselves.
Yeah. So no one?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Hey, man, Danny Ainge has that trade exception. Just remember.
Yeah. Yeah, but then eventually when he doesn't use it, he'll be like, oh, I thought it was too valuable to give up. Like he'll just let it expire and just like, nope, too valuable.
That is my actual dream for the next year. We'll get into that next episode, though.
That's actually not a bad idea, at least considering that he doesn't have long on his contract, right?
Oh, no, he's got 3 more years, yeah.
I'm confused. So when he signed, it was 28. Yeah, that's right. That's when you were in town.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
We found out about it together.
We did. We're in Thule. That's true. We're waiting on a ride, and then we both got a notification, and we simultaneously took our phones out of our pockets, and our wives were rolling their eyes at us at the same time as well, and we're like, oh no. Yeah. that's true. For some reason I thought that extension was signed earlier, but it wasn't, which just makes this weirder. Like, what did they think, that he had trade potential?
I don't know, but they're in a weird spot where they're like kind of capped out, but or they will be if they extend Sexton next year, then re-sign Drummond. So, yeah, this is a weird team. But I, if I'm a Cavs fan, I'm not expecting much this year. But I'm at least like more optimistic than I was last season. I think that keep your expectations low. You're probably not making the playoffs, but you'll be more fun to watch, or you should be more fun to watch if nothing else.
Can I just point out that it's the same contract he signed in 2018 that Gordon Hayward signed this summer or this offseason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. We'll get there.
Yeah, I know we will. This is the breadcrumbs, Brian.
We've talked a lot about the Atlanta Hawks this offseason. They, the Cavaliers, have been extremely busy bringing in Danilo Gallinari, Bogdan Bogdanovic are the two big ones. They also got Chris Dunn, Rajon Rondo, Solomon Hill, Tony Snell. So they're, as we've said, they are now suddenly one of the deeper teams in the NBA. I think the question for them is, A, who's in their starting five? And B, I mean, the offense is clearly flowing through Trae Young still, but how do you balance your rotation and your lineups to keep everyone happy?
So last time we talked about that, I had completely forgotten Cameron Reddish until late in our segment, which meant, I have to carve out another 25 minutes.
Right.
I don't think you do. I think, like I actually ended up saying last time around, I think because of this convoluted schedule and because of this season, which is just going to be odd, you gamble on depth and the amount of bodies that you have present. And if that means that Gallo one night goes, you know what? I'm a little bit old. I'm not feeling it tonight. They just go, you know what? That's okay, buddy. We'll just give those minutes to DeAndre Hunter and John Collins. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Don't worry about it. If Trae Young has averaged 56 points over the course of 4 games and he's like, I'm a little bit beat. they'll go, hey, Chris Dunn, Rajon Rondo, you guys are up. Can you handle just one game by yourself where you don't completely screw up? Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. I betting on depth, I mean, that was my strategy in fantasy football this year because I expected it to be a weird season. And I think it's a smart strategy in the NBA, not only, you know, just because the schedule is going to be condensed and there's going to be shorter training camp preseason,
right?
You know, for teams, like every team is going to be in a different spot, right? So the Hawks mm-hmm. haven't played in now upward of 9 months, more than 9 months by the time the season starts. So,
you know, they're starving.
And there's going to be some rust to knock off, or just, you know, you God forbid there's going to be some acclimatization injuries where guys just aren't, you know, you're not in basketball shape until you start playing actual right. basketball. And in training camps now, they still, you know, we're recording this on Friday, December 4th. So on Sunday is when they can actually start doing more than just individual workouts. That gives them a 2-week window, and then they're playing actual regular season basketball. So I think, you know, keeping minutes in check for a lot of these guys will be one way to keep everyone happy. But I think you're right, like they actually have too much talent to keep like John Collins and Gallo are going to be competing for minutes to the four. DeAndre Hunter is going to be in that mix as well. Cam Reddish at the three, Bogdan at the three or the two. Kevin Herter is at the two. You have Chris Dunn, Rajon Rondo. There's a lot of guys. Chris Dunn is a
wing now, so that's a two as well.
Right, like, right. So, I mean, like Trae Young, I think you can lock in to his role. You know what he's going to be. But, I mean, the thing I'm following most closely with the Hawks between now and the start of the regular season is whether they sign John Collins to an extension or whether they announce, is he even still starting? I mean, I think that they've said he is, and they're planning on having Gallo come off the bench, but they also just gave Gallo $61 million, which seems like a lot of money to give to a reserve.
Well, so the last year of his contract is only partially guaranteed.
Right.
So that's worth remembering. Not saying that makes everything all right. So here's where I'm at. I think they end up extending John Collins with the idea of trading him later.
Mm.
I really do. I mean, you don't want to lose him for nothing. I think that would be a disaster. So what's the alternative here? That you shop him while he has 1 year left before you need to make a decision? Okay, then what will that fetch? Probably not a whole lot, right?
And, well, the alternative would be just let him test restricted free agency and let the market set his price.
Right. But then again, it takes one team. We saw what the Hornets did this year with Gordon Hayward. It takes one mm-hmm. team, then he's out of there and they got no compensation for him. So,
or a massive trade exception.
Oh boy. Yeah. I mean, but, honestly, yeah. Like, why not? That might, but they would have to agree to it.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, you're running a risk. If you let him test restricted free agency, he could sign a gigantic offer sheet with someone that you don't want to match, or he could sign a shorter deal than what you would have liked to give him. So you are running a risk if you're Atlanta, but at the same time, I mean, based on the reports from earlier this year, he was talking about, like, I think I deserve a max contract. If I'm Atlanta, I do not give him that contract in the next 2 weeks. I say,
no.
Godspeed. Good luck. We'll decide what we're doing with you next offseason.
Yeah. So he and Lauri Markkanen are somewhat in the same spot. They're both looking at money. And I think it's so crucial for both Atlanta and Chicago that they don't overpay for what is essentially a traditional four.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they extend them, it has to be with the mindset of flipping them later on.
Yeah, like, or ultimately, I mean, maybe they flip Gallo, as you said, with only $5 million guaranteed in the last year of that deal. It seems like Collins and Gallo together is incompatible long term, or you're throwing way too much money at that specific position long term.
Mm. Oh so, no, I think both are in play to get moved later on. Because here's the thing. If you can get something for those two down the line, maybe it's a proper shooting guard, like, because maybe Bogdan, it like moves up to the three, and then DeAndre Hunter moves up to the four. It's because I'm working under an assumption here, admittedly. I think DeAndre Hunter is going to be the full-time four moving forward, because he is that, you know, a wing that can play the four, which is what we all are talking about, which is all the rage in the NBA these days. So I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if they just went out there in a year or so after they've extended John Collins and then basically said, okay, we're open to the market in 2021. Someone is going to leave 2021 disappointed. They're not going to get their guy. That's when we can step in and say, hey, do you guys want a 2010 guy? Yeah. And some team is going to bite.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make this comparison, or I'm not going to compare these guys in the sense that I think they are currently as good, but
right.
It's possible that Atlanta's best starting five moving forward has Reddish at the three, DeAndre Hunter at the four, and they can be, you know, right now they're a very poor man's version of what Boston has with Tatum and Brown, where instead of, you know, a John Collins type or even a Gallo type at the four, like, you just have, you know, those two guys plus Bogdan, three completely interchangeable wings. It does not matter who's listed as what. I mean, I think Hunter would be defensively playing up, guarding the bigger guy, and then Bogdan and Reddish could be completely interchangeable. But, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't. I think you're right. It's very possible that both of those guys are here now, but not necessarily a part of the long-term future. And I think we talked about this when they made all these signings. Like, all of a sudden, they have some pretty easily, you know, if a star gets frustrated and wants out, if Bradley Beal asks out in the next year, they have the salary matching contracts in Gallo and Bogdan and Clint Capella, and now they have a bunch of young guys in Collins and Herter and Reddish and Hunter and Ogunquu, who they got this year at number six. So, you know, they could very easily be in the bidding here, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The Hawks are just going to be one of the most interesting teams from a team-building perspective in the next year or two.
Yeah.
Because they've, you know, they have a great foundation, and now they're in that, like, shaky time where expectations haven't arrived yet, but when they do, they're going to ramp up quickly. So, like, this is kind of your time to formulate what you think is going to be your core moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree with that entirely. I mean, there are so many routes to go. Ultimately, I actually think it could be interesting to see, like, a long-term lineup of Okongwu at the five, Hunter at the four, Reddish at the three, Trey at the one. I'm not really sure about Kevin Herter at the two, but, like, you can find a two in the market by giving up all the other guys, like you brought up Bradley Beal. And boy, I mean, suddenly you have something there. At least if they pan out the right way, right? And if not, okay, you keep Bogdanovich, you keep Gallo, and you keep Collins, and then you go from there. There are so many pathways to take here. Or they just save up, like you said, and just trade for a star and give that star to Trae Young and go, here you go, you've gotten help. Now go win.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, since we brought up a team that's fun from a team-building perspective, Moria, let's go to a team that makes no sense right now from a team-building perspective, and would be the Detroit Pistons, but the shrug emoji is the only way I can accurately sum up their offseason.
Yeah.
I don't know what the long-term vision is there. And their GM, Troy Weaver, at Media Day was talking about, you know, he's seen the jokes about how much he loves centers. And he's like, they're right. I do. I love centers. Mm-hmm. So, what do you expect from this team? This Island of Misfit Toys team?
See, I want to sound smart and give you, like, the whole breakdown of what I'm trying to make of this. Like, oh, I see their grand plan. But I don't. I don't. I have no clue. If they have a long-term plan in place that will unfold slowly over the next couple of years, I will take my hat off and bow to them for having a long-term vision that starts off this way and ends up being fantastic, because right now I don't get it. I think I said this on an earlier podcast. I do think maybe they signed Mason Plumlee to that deal to have some salary filler to put into mm-hmm. trades. Now, I don't understand the 3 years. That's a little bit weird to me. Like, two? Okay. Like, fair enough. That I could see. Three is stretching it, I think. But fine. Like, whatever. They got DeLon Wright. That's actually an acquisition I like. He's good. They got Jeremy Grant. I like Jeremy Grant. He's overpaid, but I like Jeremy Grant. So they have some talent that is movable in both Wright and Grant. And then if you know, the money works up, doesn't work out, you can throw in Plumlee, take on a bad deal, maybe throw in some draft picks or some young guys, and maybe you have a guy that you want or something. But ultimately, though, I was so curious about just seeing what they were up to moving forward. I wanted them to get younger. I wanted them to go almost process Sixers. I thought, you know, they had Sekou Doumbouya. You know, they had the 7th pick, which they turned into Killian Hayes. And then they traded up for Isaiah Stewart. They had Sadiq Bey. Like, that's a pretty interesting nucleus. And they have Mikhailiuk as well, who's a great shooter. There are pieces there that make sense, that are interesting. And I thought they would add to that. And instead, they just pivoted to something else entirely that I cannot identify.
Yeah, I mean, like, Josh Jackson they added as well, and he showed signs last year with Memphis. So some of their fringe moves I actually did like, as you mentioned, DeLon Wright as well. It's just the Plumlee and Grant, I just don't see what they're hoping to accomplish, because, I mean, they still have Blake Griffin, and he's clearly not going to opt out of his contract, so they have him for 2 more years, not a part of the long-term future, but you're probably going to have to pay assets to get off of him unless you're taking on a similarly bad deal. They also spent a pick last year on Sekou Doumbouya. And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he profiles more as a 4 than a 3 moving forward, right?
Correct. I had him 4th of my big board last year. And I definitely see him moving forward as a playmaking 4. Like, actually, if he pans out, let me put it this way. If he pans out, he would be the type of 4 that the teams in the league would just, you know, drool over. Like, a guy who can be a little bit of Draymond-esque in terms of being a play creator, a play initiator, but also a guy who can go get you buckets, who can rebound, who can defend. Like, there is a lot of potential in this guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, now you have Jeremy Grant, who also most likely should be playing the 4.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess you're hoping Josh Jackson hits, and then he can be your 3 moving forward. You still have Derrick Rose for some reason. I mean, like,
that's probably a trade, mid-season trade, I think.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But yeah. I'm just surprised that no one took him this offseason. That seemed like, I mean, there was a, you know, didn't they turn down first-round picks for him, or they were at least seeking a first-round pick for him at last year's trade deadline?
They have sought a first-round pick for him. I definitely remember that was at the trade deadline. But I don't remember seeing anyone offering that. I might be wrong too.
I know they were seeking one. Maybe they didn't turn down. They shouldn't have turned down one if they did. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly not long for this team as well. So
I would agree.
Neither
were Saeed or Smith. Can we talk about that for a second?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Their cap management this offseason is just, I've been joking with the Pistons guys, Duncan Smith, who's a friend of the podcast, and Lazarus Jackson as well, that, you know, Josh Smith, the dead money of Josh Smith just came off their books, and now they have more dead money on their books, which I think needs to be renamed the Josh Smith Memorial dead money on their cap sheet.
Like, Duncan Smith actually said in our group DM, yeah, I'm airing out dirty laundry now, that he was like, oh, I'm okay with them, like, stretching. I think it's a good way of, like, managing the salary cap. Like, it's a smart play. To some extent, I agree with him. Like, if you have a chance to get someone really, really good, not Gordon Hayward, someone else who is better. And the only thing you can do to carve out enough cap space to get like a superstar or something is to stretch a certain guy. Like, okay, fine. I see the value in that. I don't see the value in ending up stretching a guy for 5 years when you had cap space coming into the offseason.
Right. I think you said it well. If 3 years down the road we look at this Pistons team and look at back at this offseason, we're like, yep, this laid the foundation for a great Pistons team, then I will just happily eat my words here. Yeah. But it is just extremely hard to see the vision. And I feel like this team is going to be in contention for the worst in the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is one scenario in which that wouldn't be the case. And I admit it's an unlikely scenario, but we need to entertain that nonetheless. Blake Griffin returning and playing well.
Mm-hmm. And staying healthy.
And staying healthy. Exactly. Staying healthy and being productive. The thing is, I'm not sure he will be.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, do you even have the motivation to, you know, you're getting paid that much money either way. Like, you have to look at this roster on paper and be like, well, okay, what's our ceiling? 35 wins? Like,
no, I don't think he looks at that way. I'll give Blake Griffin this. He has never been taken serious over the course of his career. He's always been made fun of a lot, and very often unfairly so. I will give him this. I don't think he's going to look at roster. I don't think he's going to look at contract. I think he's out to prove people wrong. I definitely think there's a chip on his shoulder that is going to manifest itself in some capacity. I think he's going to make it a mission to get back, play at a high level, and stay healthy. I just question whether or not that's a reasonable expectation or if that could become reality. But yeah. I do think his heart is definitely in the right place. I think he's in it to get back and prove some people wrong. And for his sake, I hope he does. I would love to see Blake Griffin back and playing like he did 2 years ago when he was, you know, 24.5 points per game, 7.5 boards, 5.5 assists, like 2.5 threes. Like, dude was excellent. Excellent. Like, if that player came back, like, boom, the Pistons would be much better.
Well, let's go to a similarly depressing team, Mort. The New York Knicks resisted the temptation to overpay anyone like Gordon Hayward this offseason. Right. So that is a win. They signed mostly reasonable contracts. Like Austin Rivers, I think, was 3 years, $10 million. They got mm-hmm. Alec Burks for a year, Nerlens Noel for a year.
So is that depressing?
Depressing in the sense that they're still not going to be any good.
Oh, no, but we've been begging the Knicks to like turn this into a process for years. They're finally doing so. Should we penalize them then?
I'm not penalizing them. I'm just saying they're going to suck this year.
Well, okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But, I mean,
that is
still on the right track, though.
Yeah, well, in theory, I mean, you need to hit a pick at some point, but, you know, you're relying on lottery luck, and I think the question for them is, you know, I think R.J. Barrett, they're going to give another shot, like his rookie year, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell Robinson is either their best or second best player. He should be locked into the starting lineup. After that,
No, I agree with you, but Coach Tibbs might not feel that strongly about that stance.
About Robinson?
He was like, so here's the thing. As a former Chicago fan, I know how Tibbs talks. I know what mm-hmm. he means when he says stuff. And he was like, yeah, don't, he's been having some, you know, Mitchell Robinson, he's had some good moments, but there's a lot of work to be done. So usually when he says that, it means I don't trust this certain player. And it's not in a malicious way. It just means that certain player is not seasoned enough to the point where Tibbs is going to go, oh yeah, I feel like I can play you 30 minutes a game and I can trust your actions. It means so to speak, that that player will have to look back when he's run down to the court after a mistake and go, uh-oh, what's going to happen? Because Tibbs will absolutely consider benching him.
And he's got plenty of competition between Nerlens and now Obi Toppin as well, who I don't know if you profile him as a 4 or 5 at the next level, but...
Yeah, probably a 4, but I mean, you know, he should play the 5, I think.
And there's competition there too, because you got at least Julius Randle. You know, I like there's just competition, which I guess is a good thing, because you don't have a single guy who is a home run. We're definitely building around this guy moving forward. So there is competition at every spot. Mm. I'm genuinely intrigued to see who wins out these who is starting a point guard between Elfrid Payton, Dennis Smith Jr., Frankie Smokes.
Elfrid Payton.
That would be my guess too, just based on how last year played out, but. Yep. And then, you know, at the 2 guard, we can have, I'm guessing Barrett will probably play the 3, and you could do Alec Burks or Austin Rivers at the 2, or even Frankie Smokes at the 2. Reggie Bullock's still there as well.
I have a hot take.
Oh, boy. I'm ready.
Emmanuel Quickly.
Starting at the 2?
Yeah. I know.
Why not? Well, why not?
Let me tell you why. This dude is a shooter. Like, pure effing shooter. 43% from downtown last season for Kentucky. 92% from the free throw line. This guy is a knockdown guy. And if you are going to play with a lineup that is so focused on slashing and getting to the basket, you are going to need floor spacing. He's got that.
And they have nothing to lose, right? I mean, they're not going anywhere this season, so you might as well find out what you have in some of your young guys. Yeah. It's probably going to piss off the veterans that you just signed. But
I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, they're getting paid either way.
Right. No, I would do that, and I realize a lot of people will be like, dude, he's not ready.
Right.
You know, he was actually a sophomore at Kentucky, so it's not like he's a little bit seasoned. He's 21. He's not this 19-year-old kid coming in. I would argue, like, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
I mean, I think the problem for Quickly, for Toppin, really for all of these rookies, is this unconventional calendar where,
yeah,
you know, the draft was 3 weeks ago, not even 3 weeks ago at this point. No summer league. Training camps are already started back up. They haven't played competitive basketball, most of them, since March, if not earlier. So, you know, I just, from what I've gleaned from these Media Week interviews, it seems like expectations around the league are pretty low for rookies right away. They just are, you know, they know that this is a weird time to be coming into the NBA.
Right.
So, you know, there's just not a lot of time for these guys to get up to speed before the regular season starts again. It's like a 2 weeks between the time you could start doing 5-on-5 and, or at least between the time you could stop doing individual workouts and the regular season begins. So, yep. Like, would it shock me if Quickly draws some starts, especially toward the back end of the year? No, because at that point, the Knicks might be in full tank mode anyway, but I'm guessing, especially given Tibbs' tendencies, he'll probably go with veterans early and then move on to the rookies later in the season.
Yeah. I think so, too.
Yeah. So let's go more to your former team.
Well, before the Chicago Bulls. I'm very glad you didn't ask this question because, you know, you have this in the outline you sent me. And you just didn't want any more negativity. You're asking me, is Kevin Knox a lost cause?
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to tell you how much I appreciate that we're actually going away from the negativity. So I'm not even going to answer that. It's just, I appreciate you not asking that question.
Good. Yeah. I mean, who knows? It's a new coach, new season, maybe.
Right.
We'll see.
Right. And we'll look, see. Christmas is right around the corner. Kevin Knox might have wanted, you know, told Sander that he wished, you know, for Christmas that he's able to play basketball. So
He's an NBA caliber talent.
That he's an NBA caliber talent. So maybe he gets his Christmas wish.
He gets Michael's secret stuff, and all of a sudden, he's a monster.
Right. Boom. There we go. I don't think that's how it works. They didn't turn into monsters. Yeah. Oh, good Lord. Know your Space Jam history, Brian.
All right. Let's move to the Bulls now, Mort. A somewhat quiet offseason for them as well.
Yeah.
But they did get Patrick Williams with the number 4 overall pick. They also finally, mercifully overhauled their front office, their coaching staff, Jim Boylan out, Billy Donovan in, Garpak's gone, Karnišovas in.
That's almost a year ago now.
Well, you know.
Is that weird? Does that feel, that was in April. That's just 4 months away.
That is wild. Yeah. Well, we haven't seen them since. They were part of the Delete Eight. Yeah. So, you know, this is our first chance to see the Bulls under new management. So let's start with Zach LaVine, who was by far their best player last year, all-star caliber player. What do you expect out of him under Billy Donovan?
So several months ago, I predicted on this podcast that Zach LaVine would average 30 this season. And that was before, I don't even remember it was before or after the new regime. But I think it's in the cards. And then, you know, so Karnišovas has said that he really likes LaVine. He wants him to play more of a team game. LaVine is actually all in on that. One thing you can never knock Zach LaVine from is actually just how involved he is and how open-minded he is to actually trying out new things. He's not been given a lot to work with from a coaching perspective in a long time, so this is going to be different. What I think is going to happen here is that they're going to play him more off the ball, and he really embraced the three-point shot, and I think that is going to take up. And I think when I say play off the ball, I don't necessarily mean solely as a spot-up shooter. Like, I think that's going to be part of it. But I also think that instead of having him, like, dribble the ball up the court, getting a high screen, and then having to take the ball to the cup, like, that makes it too predictable. Having him move around a little bit, he can cut. You know, there are lob plays that can be drawn up. I think he's going to have an easier time scoring now because there's going to be a head coach on the sideline who is actually competent at his job. And I think, you know, he averaged 25.5 points. Yeah. Is it unreasonable to expect that a good coach could add 4.5 efficient points to that total? I don't think it is.
No, I mean, so at Bleacher Report, we're doing our top 100 series ahead of the season, and it's a similar scoring format that the NBA math guys used, where it's like, you know, a 1 to 12 sliding scale. 12 is at, like, best player in the league. 6 is solid starter. 7 is high-end starter, but not all-star. So Dan Favale, who's running the rankings, DM'd me today because he was asking for help with some tiebreakers. He's like, can you explain why so many people gave Wendell Carter Jr. a 7? Which is, again, high-end starter, but not all-star. Yeah. Like, I think it's just the potential. Boylan bump, right?
Yeah, it's potential. So Wendell Carter Jr., one of my favorites. And again, this was a guy I was rooting for back in college because I loved his game. So this wasn't while I was a Bulls fan and I clung onto him afterwards. It's because I genuinely think he's such a good player. And I dug up some advanced metrics while he was during his pre-draft process. And the guy that he statistically was closest to, just in terms of his all-around game, was Ben Simmons. Which I found interesting because he's a really good passer. And so Jim Boylan had him run box-to-box. That doesn't work. We're talking about an NBA center here. You don't run box-to-box. This isn't the 1980s anymore. He's going to get unleashed. He's going to get threes. He's going to get dribble handoff opportunities. He's going to be a guy who can initiate the offense. Think about this for a second. The guy who's taken over the Bulls, Arturis Karnišovas, who did he have in Denver at the center position who was really good at passing, right? Right. I'm not saying you're going to see Wendell Carter Jr. dribbling the ball up the court like Nikola Jokic, but I am definitely telling you there are certain plays, certain actions that Denver used with Jokic that you are going to see with Wendell Carter. And so many people are going to get their eyes opened about his passing acumen. And then you add in the fact that he's already a very good rebounder. He's a very good defender. You know, still, you know, he still needs some polish on that end, but considering age and responsibility level, like, he's objectively good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the potential factor, and it's also the whole having been misused. I would argue as much in saying last season there was not a starter in the NBA who was used worse compared to his skill set than Wendell Carter Jr.
Al Horford might disagree with you, but it's close.
So here's the thing. I get that, but Al had so many possessions, though. Like, when you want, like, he got the ball a lot more, and he just didn't do enough with it. Wendell Carter Jr. would rarely get the ball. Like, there were so many possessions where he would even seal off his defender in the paint, and he wouldn't get the ball. For some reason, like it, because the Bulls also played a bit of incohesive game, and Chris Dunn, while I love his defense, just not a point guard or a passer, just could not make those passes. So there's definitely reason for optimism. And then you have Billy Donovan, who used to coach Steven Adams. So I also firmly expect that Carter is going to get better as a screener. I think this is going to be a breakout year for him.
Well, since you brought up, you know, LaVine playing more off the ball earlier, and then this problem with Carter not getting fed when he has proper positioning, I think that begs the question about the Bulls' point guard since Chris Dunn now is gone. You know, they still have Tomas Satoransky, Kobe White, who they drafted with the number 7 overall pick last year. Right. Do you think White can be that type of point guard, or do you think he's better suited for the Lou Williams role, super scorer off the bench?
That's what I think, but the whole Bulls roster is right now these days saying otherwise. So Tomas Satoransky was like, so this is why I think European players are they really should be higher valued in NBA context. So Satoransky, who started at point guard last season, was asked about White, and he was like, oh yeah, White should start. He's a playmaker. Like, there wasn't that, you know, that bravado of, no, I need to prove myself. No, he was like, no, he should start. He's doing a lot of great things. And everyone is, like, raving about his playmaking right now. I'm in that boat of saying, I'll believe it when I see it. Because what I saw is a guy who loves to create off the dribble, who loves to just get to the basket, who loves to shoot. And that 11-game sample to wrap up the season was definitely impressive, even if the season was weird and all that. Like, he averaged, I think, like 24, 25 points or something like that. It was pretty ridiculous. And he had some moments where you could see the flashes, but I never really saw him as a fully-fledged starting point guard. But if that becomes a reality now, that's a game changer for the Bulls. It really is, because that's what they needed, a point guard, a playmaker. I Kobe White to me is a bit of an enigma, so I guess we'll see.
Since you brought up enigmas, I think that's the perfect transition to talk about a guy who is, you've made your feelings pretty clear about him and Lauri Markkanen.
Right.
In terms of, especially, you know, should the Bulls extend him over the next couple of weeks, and they just drafted Patrick Williams, who ostensibly plays the same position as Lauri Markkanen. So I think it's safe to say they probably will not extend Lauri, but do you think they... they might?
So they are deep in extension talks.
Really?
Yes. Lauri Markkanen's agent. So Markkanen himself said his agent, he's made his agent, he's pushed his agent to get it done.
Okay.
And the Bulls are actually open to it. Arturas Karnišovas loves Markkanen. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say I know more than Arturas Karnišovas, so I don't. If they see value in Lauri Markkanen, look, fine by me. I personally don't think that he's the archetype that you want at the four in today's league. I think he's a bit outdated. But it could be that they see some more potential in his playmaking ability, like his ball handling. And if that's the case, that's one avenue I can see that working out. Because that's what he's lacking right now. It's the ball handling, it's the playmaking, you know, his ability to just simply pass the basketball. He can actually make nice passes, but he just does it so rarely that you can't rely upon it. But if Billy Donovan and Karnišov is like, and we always forget to mention Mark Eversley in all this. He's in there too. If that trio comes together and they figure out a way to play Mark in a way where he isn't just a spot-up shooter, but he's a guy who can put the ball on the floor. He's a guy who can attack mismatches. He's a guy who can pass and like rack up assists as well. Like make definitive plays that leads to scores. Then the perception of Markkanen changes. It's just, it's not something we've seen from him before. So you have to take a pretty big step in your assumption level about what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I was figuring they wouldn't extend him is because I kind of thought they would want to see him under Billy Donovan, see how he performs in this new system before having to make a decision either way. I mean, maybe if they can get him at a super team-friendly number, yeah, they're willing to do it now.
Yeah, I think that's it. And also, if, like, let's assume that he doesn't go into, apologies, he doesn't go into restricted free agency, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have him on a long-term contract. Then he's easy to move, because then if he does have a good season, but he still doesn't really mesh all that well, the Bulls can kind of shop him around and go, "Hey, guys, look, we have Lauri Markkanen here. He had a bounce back year after the Boylan fiasco. We know that was dumb too. We're also laughing. Don't worry, we fired those people. They're not here anymore. But he's locked up for another 3 years."
Mm-hmm.
Interested? Well, some teams might go, yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
We'll give up a pick.
That's definitely fair. Okay, let's go on to the Washington Wizards now.
Yes. Where,
we talked a lot about them a few episodes ago with the Westbrook Wall trade. So if you want our extended thoughts on how Russell Westbrook fits with Bradley Beal in particular, it's all in there. But you know, I think it's safe to say Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal are going to be in the Wizards starting lineup. I feel like Thomas Bryant is most likely to be their starting five, although they did sign Robin Lopez this offseason as well. If you're running the Wizards, how do you fill out the three and the four?
Bertans at the four, I think.
Okay, so you would bring him starting, not off the bench.
He got $16 million a year, right?
Danilo Gallinari got $20
million. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is true. But the thing about Gallo compared to Bertans, though, is when he comes off the bench, he can do more than just shoot. Like he can initiate the offense. He can handle the basketball. He can dribble. And I'm not saying that Bertans can't. He's actually a pretty adept ball handler for someone 6'10 playing the four. But it's not in a... He's not as good at it as Gallo. I think that's fair to say, right? But but at the same time, like you can, I think if you trade for Russell Westbrook, who is such a bad shooter, you need to flank him with someone who is just so utterly ridiculously efficient and, you know, not gun shy to actually stretch that floor out. And like, okay, you might be able to say, oh well, Thomas Bryant can hit a three, Rui Hachimura can hit a three, sure, but like, and here's the thing, I actually think Rui should be the starting four, but I think the presence of Russ alters the plans, and I this is why I hate it. I don't want the youth movement in Washington to get killed. And then at the three, no question in my eyes, even though it might not happen, but in my perspective, it should happen. It's Troy Brown Jr. at the three.
Yeah. I figure you would go Brown Jr. I think really the only other viable alternative is Isaac Bonga. So I think the four is definitely the big question because, as you said, I mean, they did just give Davis Bertans $80 million.
Right.
So that would certainly imply.
And they drafted Denny.
Right, and they drafted Denny. And then, yeah, but they did also just get Rui Hachimura. He was the number nine pick, I want to say.
So they have three starting caliber power forwards. Yes.
Right, right. So I'm intrigued to see how they shake that out. But I think my instinct at first was Bertans continues to come off the bench just because that's what they did last year, and Rui was the starting four last year. But yeah. I think you're right. The addition of Russ, and then again, just the ticking free agent clock of Bradley Beal, you know, you need to kind of accelerate the youth movement as much as you probably shouldn't, mm-hmm. because you're not at the point where you're going to win anything, even if you do. But yeah, I mean, Bradley Beal clearly does not want to be on a 25-win team again. So, you know, you can be more patient with a guy like Rui when you know John Wall's out for the year and we're not going to do anything. But when you have Russ and Beal in the backcourt, you might decide you want a Bertans. You want a more veteran presence, a more reliable presence, a guy who's been in the league for a long time. You know what you can count on, especially if you have a Troy Brown Jr. as your starting three, who is still more of that mystery box type.
Yeah, and I'm really worried as well, because, you know, I've voiced my opinion about Troy Brown Jr. here on this podcast plenty. I am worried that we are going to see his development get a little bit pushed aside because of the presence of Westbrook.
Mm.
I am worried about that. And it's not just Troy Brown Jr., it's everyone on the Wizards who are of a certain age. I want them to get shots. I want them to get the ball in their hands to make decisions. I don't want to see Russ, and to some extent Beal, but Beal is a more willing passer, I actually think, when it comes into like the flow of the offense. I just don't want to see both Beal and Westbrook end up taking like 20 plus shots both each every single night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is that going to accomplish for the long term perspective? If it comes at the expense of the development of Hachimura, of Troy Brown Jr., of Thomas Bryan, you know, of Denny Avdija, Isaac Bonga, like, what are you doing then? Like, then the youth movement is for naught.
Yeah. I mean, the Russ trade ultimately feels like them just kicking the can down the road on having to trade Beal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, ultimately, I know he has pledged his loyalty to Washington, but I just have a hard time believing he really envisions spending the rest of his career there, especially if they continue on the trajectory that they're going on.
Right.
And, you know, with Russ now there for the next 3 years on that big contract, like, there isn't a ton of flexibility, especially after re-signing Bertans, too. There just isn't a lot of financial flexibility to add, you know, another big piece to that puzzle. So, you know, I think the writing to me seems like it's on the wall, but...
I see what you did.
No pun intended, yeah. But, you know, clearly they're not at that point yet. I mean, their GM, Tommy Shepard, has been batting away that question for weeks now. So, yeah, like you, I mean, it feels like they could very easily at some point pivot and say, all right, Beal's up for sale, highest bid wins, and, like, flip him to Miami for Tyler Hero and a bunch of picks and salary filler or whatever. Or send them to Brooklyn for, you know, the LeVert, Dinwiddie, Jared Allen package. And, like, you'd have an intriguing group of young talent plus Westbrook there who can put up numbers and put butts in seats next year, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, what do you see for this Wizards team this year? Do you think they can beat out Atlanta and get the 8 seed?
You know what? I always play it a little bit coy because I don't want to, you know, I like to hedge my bets. I'll be honest mm-hmm. with you, because I think everything can really happen in this dumb league. And I sure. And I say that with great affection. But if you put a gun to my head, I would say Atlanta is the better team. And that is how little I trust Russell Westbrook, because I actually think what the Wizards have is interesting. I like what they have. I like the youth movement. I like Bradley Beal. I like Davis Bertans. Adding Russell Westbrook to this, what is the upside here? Okay, if he reels himself in, But you know what? We've been saying that for 6 years. Every time we come into like a season preview, you and I go, well, you know what? It'll be a good season if Russell Westbrook actually decides to play intelligent basketball.
No. Yeah.
And at what point has that ship just sailed?
This is the time. This is the time. This is the year.
This is the year. Yeah. No, I don't trust him. I think he's one of those guys who... Oh, God, I'm going to get flamed for this. So we always talk about empty numbers, and we talk about players making their team better.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think Russell Westbrook makes his team better to some extent. But I think if you put it overall in terms of him, you know, soaking up possessions, if you also look at the fact that, you know, he takes up so many shots and passes and opportunities for guys to develop, I have to wonder if the long-term consequences are so severe that he's actually hurting your team in the long run. So basically, in any current year, he can deliver to the point where he's improving the team on the court, but he's just hurting the long-term product to such an extent that you won't see the consequences for a few years.
It's certainly possible. I think, you know, given where the Thunder are now compared to the way they were a few years ago, you could draw that conclusion, where the Rockets appear to be heading. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there is certainly a trail of carnage left in the wake of his massive contract leaving their books. And yeah, again, I mean, ultimately it feels like this is going to end in a Beal trade at some point, and right, they're going to be starting from scratch all over again. So, you know, I think Russell Westbrook is, like it or not, he was an All-NBA player last year. He's still a top 20, top 25 talent in the league.
Yeah,
but
talent.
But him on that contract just makes it so impossible to build around him that I think that's the problem. If Russell Westbrook was earning a third of what he was and he's still the same production, yeah, he can be detrimental at times on offense, but you can live with it because you can bring in other guys to help supplement that. Mm. It's the fact he's making $40-plus million that
and
it's
he's
just impossible.
Also.
Right, yeah. He's going to start losing a step at some point. Right. So, yeah, it's impossible to build a genuine championship contender around him at this point. I'll concede that much ground.
Yeah. Look, it's fair. You've always been a Russell Westbrook supporter, I think it's fair to say. Which, and I get it, because he plays a brand of basketball that is not just very entertaining, but it awakens the romanticism in us. Because it's really that mentality of, oh, I'm getting knocked down again and again, but I'm getting back up, and I'm dunking it in your face. And I'm posting, like, the first triple-double-double since Wilt Chamberlain. I'm, you know, averaging a triple-double for the first time since Oscar Robertson, and then I'm doing it for three straight years. Like, I get it. The narrative and the statistical accomplishments around Russell Westbrook, it's fantastic. It's utterly fantastic. I mean, this is a guy who's cracked 20,000 points, 6,000 rebounds, and 7,000 assists as a point guard. That's remarkable. Absolutely. But we have this tendency of looking at him and those accomplishments and completely forgetting, or, you know, ignoring rather, the games that he'll go 8 of 22 and it's just been a slugfest, and he takes the dumbest shots, he makes the dumbest passes, he makes the dumbest turnovers, and at the end of the night they lose and everyone goes, well, at least he had that dunk in the third quarter, that was really entertaining. That's not how the game should be played in that sense. Like, you have to play it smart. And I think, again, I see the value in him. I do. But I really like intelligent basketball. And when I watch him play, I don't see intelligent basketball.
That's fair. Speaking of not seeing intelligent basketball, Mort, let's end on a high note with the Charlotte Hornets.
God, another team that I was high about coming into this offseason. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's genuinely start on the positive note. LaMelo Ball at number three. A lot of people had him as the, you know, not runaway number one prospect because there wasn't that in this class, but
right.
People had him as their number one prospect. A lot of smart scout people, or, you know, draft people, draft Twitter analysts, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you see minutes shaking out between him, Terry Rozier, Devontae Graham?
I think they have to prioritize LaMelo to some extent over Terry Rozier. I think Devontae Graham is interesting enough that you kind of want to keep his minutes at the same point, because he was a guy who probably should have won MIP, honestly. I think, mm-hmm. at least over Brandon Ingram, I think that was a bad call for someone who had already shown significant signs and was the second number overall pick. But like 3.5 three-pointers made per game, 7+ assists, had many great games where he was just balling out, you know, scoring at will, even closing games down the stretch. I think that's the kind of player you still need to give minutes to, whereas Terry Rozier is a little bit more hit or miss. So if it comes down to prioritizing minutes, I would say LaMelo and Devontae, and then downgrading Terry Rozier a little bit.
Yeah, and it might honestly behoove Terry Rozier. Like, that it might be his best role, is coming off the bench in the super sub role rather than, you know, being a starting two guard. Because when they signed him, they envisioned him as the starting point guard, and then Devontae Graham has this breakout
right,
year, and
right.
Terry Rozier kind of shifted off ball. I mean, ultimately, I think LaMelo, I don't know that he's going to start. Again, this is going back to, this is a weird year. Expectations for rookies are low. So on and so forth. Right. Like, I think it would not surprise me if Devontae, Terry start, but LaMelo is getting 25, 30 minutes a game pretty quickly off the bench.
Yeah.
And, like, Terry, I mean, Devontae Graham's up after this year, I believe. Terry right. Rozier signed this year and next year. So it's not like either of those guys have cemented themselves, you know, we're on the books for the next 5 years or anything like that. They have plenty of time to figure that out. And hey, if you split a grand majority of your backcourt minutes between those three guys, that's 32 minutes a game. There you go. Like,
yeah.
This is not...
That seems fair, it's not, actually.
Yeah, I don't think it's a Hawks situation where you have, like, so many mouths to feed that there is no way you're going to keep everyone happy. I think for the Hornets, at least, you can manage this backcourt situation. The wing might be another question after they bring in Gordon Hayward, though, because they still, you know, they've used picks in recent years, late lottery picks on both Miles Bridges and PJ Washington. So who would you start? I mean, Hayward being paid $30 million is not coming off the bench. So who would you start next to Hayward at the four?
Miles Bridges.
I agree. But why?
Well, see, this is where I'm cheating. It's because I've been reading up on the Hornets, and I know that they are planning to use PJ Washington at the five a lot.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's the kind way of saying it. I agree with you. Yeah,
PJ Washington, who is 6'7" and 230 pounds, will be their five. This is their death lineup.
I think it will be. Look, I actually loved the Vernon Carey Jr. pick at 32. I loved it because he's shed weight. He's a different kind of player now, more shifty, more nimble. I don't think he's necessarily a starting caliber center so soon, but I was hoping to see him get more minutes, but it does seem like he's going to be a project long term.
Sure.
So if that's what they want to do, fine. I had hoped coming into this season that they wouldn't have signed Gordon Hayward, and Miles Bridges would have been a three, PJ Washington the four, and
right.
I had hoped at that point that they would have found a way to get Onyeka Okongwu to put at the five. But I mean, when you have LaMelo there, I can't blame them for taking Melo. I think that's just a good pick. I mean,
right,
that is perfectly fair, but. Yeah, I think they need a five. I think they need a five, someone who, at the very least, can, you know, pick and roll and pick and pop and give Ball all the different looks that he requires for his development.
this is going to sound sarcastic, but it's not. I mean, they do have Cody Zeller.
Yeah, so I'll give you that. So I'm not a Cody Zeller fan, honestly. I mean, in terms of what he was when he came in, like, I think he's had a productive NBA career, but let's be honest, for someone who was the number fourth overall pick, he's been a disappointment seen through the lens of NBA eyes and expectations, right? I mean, career numbers of 8.5 points and 6 rebounds. Like, okay, that's, you could have found that late in the first round. That's not a problem. But he does give you some athleticism. He does give you some screen roll ability. And while he isn't a great 3-point shooter by any stretch, he did make 18 shots from there this last season. So maybe that's coming. Maybe. I don't know. He's 28 after all, so I don't know how likely that is. But I guess he's their best option, which is so depressing.
Yeah, because otherwise it's Bismack Biyombo, right?
Yeah, who they got back. Boy, that's... Yeah, as you can hear, I'm very disappointed. I had high hopes for them, and then Mitch Kupchak came in and Kupchak'd it up. Because, and let's just remind our listeners, it's not just the $120 million for Gordon Hayward.
Right.
It's also the fact that they waived Nicholas Batum.
Waived and stretched. Yeah. So they have a $9 million cap hit on their books for each of the next three seasons.
Well,
so
8 point something, because he did get signed by the Clippers, and that counteracts it.
He took a minimum deal, though, right?
Correct. I mean, it apparently just brought it down to 8 point something. So, way, big win, big win.
All right, there you go. Congrats. Right. Yeah, but still, you're paying effectively between that and Hayward's contract, you're paying almost $40 million for each of the next 3 years for the right to have Gordon Hayward. And we talked about it.
And 15% trade quick kicker.
Right. Well, we did not talk about that. We did talk about the Hayward signing in one of our free agent pods, so you can tell based on this that we're not super high on it, but if you want extended thoughts on why... you can go check out
that
episode.
We're not high on paying Gordon Hayward essentially indirectly $40 million a year?
I know, it's shocking, right?
Shocking.
Do you think with Hayward in the fold, assuming he's healthy, I'm not saying this Hornets team is going anywhere outside, like even if they make it to the playoffs, they're not going past the first round, but do you think they're in that conversation with Orlando, Atlanta, Chicago, Washington for that play-in tournament spot?
See, I don't get why you put Atlanta into that conversation. I think higher of Atlanta than you do if you put that team into those names.
Well, I don't think Atlanta is a top six seed with a bullet. So
no, okay, so that's fair. I think they have so many bodies. I almost struggle seeing how they won't get significantly better. But okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Gordon does make them better. I mean, we can criticize the signing and all that, but we're not idiots. He does make them better. He's still a good player. He's just not worth the money that he signed to, and he's certainly not worth the money plus the stretch plus the 15% trade kicker.
Right.
Yeah, I think maybe the Wizards might be a good measuring stick.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando, too.
Yeah.
Why did we not have Orlando on this list?
They made the playoffs last year.
Oh, so we're going off what they did. Oh, see, yeah. I actually misunderstood this. I thought like it was what we predicted this as being the lottery teams this year. That's why I was confused about Atlanta. Okay, fair enough. Because we agree that if in the other event, Orlando should be down here, right?
Yes, most likely, yes. Okay. Yeah, like I think Atlanta has the inside track for the 8 seed, if nothing else. But I'm not, I think they're going to be in the play-in tournament either way. Right. I wrote something for FanSided about like 5 teams that got worse in free agency, and I put the Hornets in that list, which might sound counterintuitive because like on paper they got better. But I phrased it as like they're the NBA version of that Wario meme with the like, I've won, but at what cost? Because yes, you won. You got Gordon Hayward. You will be better. You might make the playoffs. Congratulations. But you just kneecapped your long-term future.
Right.
by signing him to this contract and putting the Batum, the wave and stretch on your books. Yeah. So, yeah, but hey, they got LaMelo. So maybe, you know, by the time LaMelo is, like, up and ready to go and he's starting to hit his prime, all of this will be off their books. They have no reason to worry about it. You just got to get through these next 3 or 4 years. Right.
One thing we haven't talked about, which is also huge, if LaMelo busts...
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Let's not put that
No, I don't want to put that into the universe, so to speak. But you know, there's a reason this draft class was not highly valued. I mean,
yeah,
these players, even the best of them, came in with huge, huge warts on their games.
Mm-hmm.
And LaMelo was no different. There are a lot of issues with him. Yes, I hope he's a star. Of course I do. I hope everyone's a star because it would make for a better product. But you know that the possibility exists, and if he busts, that's not great, man. That is going to just basically flip this entire future on its head.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're spot on there. Well, that is a depressing but good way for us to wrap up. So thank you all for listening. As always, hope you're staying safe out there. Please follow us on the NBA Pod or at the NBA Pod on Twitter. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we did this episode live on Locker Room. So if you have an iOS device, download the Locker Room app. You can come hang out with us, ask us questions, even come on stage with us. Again, that is the Locker Room app on iOS, and they are working on an Android version as well. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, next episode we get to talk about good teams again. Get ready.
Yeah, looking forward to it. In the meantime, don't die, man.
Thank you.